Nihalma, Lihobo, Annyeonghaseyo, Salamat Sore. These are some greetings that you would hear among Asian communities. The first one from those who speak Mandarin Chinese, the second from Taiwanese individuals, then from Koreans, also from Indonesians. As Rick mentioned, I spent 10 years in Taiwan to learn, not only to learn how to read, write, and speak Chinese, but to work among the Chinese people. Unlike Al yesterday, when he gets up here and begins to speak, it's not hard for you to believe that he can speak Spanish, because he sounds like he can speak Spanish, and he looks like he can speak Spanish. But when I speak Chinese to people, they don't expect me to do that by the way that I look. And so when quoting Mark 16, 15 and 16, for example, in Chinese, Yesu dui ta men shuo, ni men yao wang pu tian xia qu, chuan fu yin ge wan min ting, xin er shou jin de bi ran de zhou, bu xin de bi bei ding zui. That's how it sounds in the Chinese. And when we preach the gospel in Chinese, we're trying to reach them so that they can have the opportunity to go to heaven. Because, brethren, each of us must keep that primary goal before us. It is to go to heaven. The most important thing in this world is to go to heaven. And one of the things that we do in order to reach that goal is to do what Jesus told us to do. And that is to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. It is to evangelize the world. I appreciated many of the things that Al said yesterday, especially in talking about translating for other speakers. I remember on many occasions when we would have Americans come and speak to us, speak to the brethren and speak to our visitors in Taiwan. And they would use various phrases in their lessons that could not be translated. For example, idioms are very difficult to be translated into a foreign language. And how well I remember when Brother Ira Rice came over and was talking about a man who had so much money, he, and you know how he used to do, literally had money running out of his ears. You know, and so how do you translate that into Chinese? If you say it the way he says it, they have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And if you just say, well, he had a lot of money, which is what you have to say, then it loses the force of the idiom. Or like Global Music, who came over and said that they have developed a new toothpaste. It has shoe polish in it. It's for people that constantly put their foot in their mouths. Well, that's funny in English, but it doesn't translate very well into Chinese. It reminds me of the guy who tried to set up a computer program to translate idioms from English into Chinese and back. And so he thought he'd had it worked out pretty well. And so he told his computer programmer to type in this phrase, out of sight, out of mind. And so he typed it in and translated it. And the programmer said, I don't think it worked. Well, he said, well, translate it back and let's see what it says. And when he translated it back, it said, invisible idiot. And so it just didn't work exactly right. Jokes don't translate very well into Chinese either. Like the general who was speaking to the Korean troops during the Korean War. And he would say a sentence and his translator would then say a sentence. And then he'd speak another sentence and his translator would speak another sentence. Then the general decided he was going to tell a joke. So he spent several minutes in telling the joke. And the translator seemed to just take a few seconds to tell the joke. And everybody in the audience, all the soldiers, the Korean soldiers, laughed. And after the speech was over, the general asked his translator. He said, you know, most of the time it took you about the same amount of time to translate my speech. But when I told that joke, it didn't seem to take very long. The translator explained to the general, jokes don't translate into Korean. So when you told the joke, I just told all the soldiers, the general just told a joke. Everybody laugh. And so sometimes that's how we feel what we need to do when we're translating for some people when they come and preach to us. So let me give you a little advice if you're going into a foreign field and you're going to be preaching through a translator. Brethren, make it as simple as you can. Break down all those $50 words that you like to use at lectureships and put them into 25-cent words so they can be translated into the foreign language. Forget about your jokes and forget about your idioms. And it'll make it a lot easier on your translator, and it'll make it a lot easier for your audience to understand what you're saying. Today we're talking about evangelism in the Asian community. My background is in the Chinese area, spending 10 years in Taiwan as a missionary, traveling among Chinese people throughout Southeast Asia and working among Chinese people around the world. So some of the background, a lot of the background of this lesson will come from the standpoint of Chinese people. But when we remember that the Korean and Japanese languages and much of their culture came out of Chinese, there are a lot of similarities that we can benefit from and put into use in our teaching the lost. There are more than 3 billion people who live in Asia. More than 55% of the world's population are in that continent. And there are millions of Asians living in various Western countries, especially the United States and Canada. When I talk to Chinese people about the connection between the Chinese culture and the Bible, most Chinese people do not believe that there's any connection between Chinese people and the Bible. But the fact is, the Bible mentions Chinese people. The Bible does not mention Chinese people by name, but certainly it includes Chinese people. Because everybody came from Adam and Eve, and everybody came from Noah and his three sons. And so when we read of the descendants of those people in the Bible, that includes Chinese people. And we can turn to Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, and read of God confusing the languages of the people at that time. I believe that one of the languages that God brought into existence in Genesis 11 was the Chinese language. Because they have about 5,000 years of written history, which takes us back about to the Tower of Babel. And so certainly the Bible includes Chinese people through the first 11 chapters of the Bible. Is it a coincidence, or is it just simply very interesting that the Chinese word for boat in the year 2003 is made up of 3 Chinese characters put together, pronounced in the Chinese, chuan? Those 3 Chinese characters put together make the word for boat, and those 3 characters are a vessel with 8 people. Now, when you think of a vessel with 8 people, what do you think about? You probably think about Noah and the ark. And isn't it interesting that the word for boat in Chinese in the year 2003 are 3 characters put together that means a vessel with 8 people? I don't believe that's a coincidence. I believe that God put that knowledge into their language when those languages were confused at the Tower of Babel. Now, after Genesis 11, there's not a lot of connection between the Chinese language and the Bible, because they were some of those individuals who not only went away from the Middle East in a distance, but also they were those Gentiles who began to go away from God and worship the creature instead of the Creator, as discussed in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. So because most Asians have gone away from God and have gone so far away from God, it will take more time and more effort to bring them back to where they need to be. At Truth of the World, a work of the Duluth Church of Christ in Duluth, Georgia, we are making as many efforts as we possibly can to help to reach the Chinese people and other Asian cultures that are in this world. We're doing that by literature. We have Chinese materials that we have translated that we have compiled from other brethren, especially in Taiwan and in Singapore. We have the 30 tracts that I have translated over the past few years that are available in the simplified and the traditional characters now. We have our first Bible correspondence course translated into Chinese that we're able to use among the Chinese people. We also have 5 of our English Bible correspondence courses that many Chinese and other Asian people take as well. We're continuing to compile material that can be used among the Asian community to give them the opportunity to learn God's truth and to live according to it. In August of this year, we will be beginning again a Chinese radio program that will air out of Taiwan. It will be on the Chinese Broadcasting System shortwave radio station and will beam to most of China, maybe all of China, and depending on the time that we're able to purchase, we'll also reach into Southeast Asia. We're thankful that we already have enough funds for the first year and a half of this broadcast, putting it on every week, 30 minutes a week, to beam into China to give Chinese people the opportunity to hear the gospel. I'm in Texas this week because I'm filming at World Video Bible School. In the past, 73 lessons have been taped in Chinese that are being used in many countries around this world. This week, we're going to begin starting on the Epistles of John and put that into Chinese and make it available to the Chinese people around the world. I remember there's a church in East Malaysia that are using these tapes. They don't have a preacher on Sunday, and so they use the videotapes that we've made for their sermon on Sunday. And the first time that they saw the videotape of John Grubb standing up there, or at least on the television speaking to them, they could not understand how a short, fat American could speak better Chinese than they could. And then after they got over the shock, they began to listen to what was being said. And so many congregations in Asia are benefiting from these videotapes. Also, we have our internet website at tftw.org, and you can check out a lot of the materials that are back on our table in the display room. This afternoon, we want to talk about the historical and religious background of the Chinese people, because we need to have some kind of understanding of the people we're working with, so that we're able to bring them from where they are to where they need to be. Chinese peoples, I've mentioned already, have about a 5,000-year written history. Sometimes people ask me, why do Chinese people use chopsticks instead of forks and write Chinese characters instead of English letters? And of course, I have to explain that Chinese people were eating with chopsticks long before we used forks. And they were writing and speaking Chinese long before the English language came into existence. And so we need to understand some of the things that the Chinese people do that are different than us. They celebrate different holidays as well, all based on the lunar calendar. For example, on the first day of the first month of the lunar calendar is the Chinese New Year. And this is the biggest holiday for the Chinese culture. And it is like Christmas in America, as far as all of the gifts and all of the different celebrations that go on in connection with that. Then there is the tomb sweeping festival that takes place on the fourth month and the fifth day. And this is the time when they remember their departed loved ones. And then there is the Dragon Boat Festival, which is the fifth month of the fifth day in the lunar calendar. And again, these are important holidays to the Chinese people. Further, Asia is dominated by Buddhism, Hinduism, and Islam. Until recently, it was believed that Christianity, in the form of Catholicism at least, did not reach China until the 7th century AD. However, there has been a recent article that was found in a Chinese newspaper on August 17, 2002, which indicates that Christianity reached China as early as the first century. This material will be available in print at the end of the lesson, and it will be distributed by some of the students here at the school. But from this article, it says, a Chinese scholar has discovered a clutch of Eastern Han Dynasty stone carvings in East China's Jiangsu province that suggest Christianity entered China some 500 years earlier than was previously thought. Wang Weifan, a theologist and member of the China Christian Council, said his study of the stones being kept in a museum in Suzhou showed some dated back to the year AD 86. Before Wang's research, the accepted theory was that Christianity arrived in China in the early Tang Dynasty, somewhere between 618 and 907 AD. And so there were roots of Christianity in the first century in China. But later on, of course, the major religions that dominate Asia, also China especially Buddhism, Taoism, and Confucianism, Hinduism and Islam also are in both India and other parts of Asia. In modern times, Catholics and Presbyterians began sending missionaries to Asia in the early 1500s. It was not until the late 1800s that brethren began traveling to Japan and China to preach the gospel. The Church of our Lord does not have a very long or detailed history in regard to the work among Asians. This is especially true in China. The reasons for our short history in the work among the Chinese are many. Number one reason was the constant state of war that existed in China from 1911, when the Republic of China came into existence in the city of Wuchang, later branching out into the various parts of China, which was established after the fall of the Qing Dynasty, until 1949, after the Second World War, when the nationalist forces were forced off of the mainland over to Taiwan by the Communist Army. And so between 1911 and 1949, it was very difficult to do mission work in China because of the unrest. Another reason was the church just was not very mission-minded until after the Second World War. Even then, 10 years would go by before any missionaries would come back to work among the Chinese people. When we consider that more than 55% of the world's population is in Asia, the efforts that we have made among these nations are just token. The main work that is being done among Chinese people is being done in Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Canada, and now there are beginning to be more and more people who are able to work inside mainland China, but not officially as missionaries. I've had the privilege to make 3 trips to mainland China, but I don't go as a missionary. I go as a teacher. And so when I go in, I work among the brethren, but not with a missionary visa. They're not issued. The situation in mainland China is such that when the People's Republic of China took over mainland China in 1949, true religious freedom ceased to exist. Until the late 1970s, there were practically no church buildings being used by any religious group for public worship. After the Cultural Revolution ended in 1976, some semblance of religious freedom came back into effect on the mainland. However, the only legal way that you can practice your religious beliefs then and now is through the three-self patriotic movement. That's true for Muslims, that's true for Hindus, for Buddhists, and for those who profess a belief in Christ. And so the part that deals with Protestantism is normally called the three-self church. It is called the three-self church because it is self-propagating, self-governing, and self-supporting. Any religious activity done outside the three-self church is illegal and is a punishable crime. The three-self church is an arm of the communist government in China. Therefore, it is controlled by the government. Furthermore, the Three Self Church is an interdenominational group urging all believers to unite together for the good of China. Now listen to that purpose. I'm going to say it again. The purpose of the Three Self Church is urging all believers to unite together for the good of China. Not for the good of Christianity, but for the good of China. It is an interdenominational group. Therefore, it is impossible to practice New Testament Christianity and be part of the Three Self Church. It is because of this situation that we must be diligent in training Chinese people, not Americans like me, but Chinese people, to carry the gospel to their fellow countrymen. And so this gives you a little bit of a historical and religious background. In the second place, we want to briefly discuss why it is that Asians resist New Testament Christianity. They resist New Testament Christianity because their Eastern religious beliefs keep them from accepting the truth. To fail to worship ancestors, spirits, gods, etc., is considered to rebel against the state, society, and family. Now, this is not so much true in mainland China since 1949 because it is an atheistic country. And so one of the problems that we do not have to deal with in working among the mainland Chinese people is the problem of Buddhism and Taoism and ancestor worship, because they don't believe any of that. They haven't been taught that for more than 50 years. We simply have to deal with their atheistic evolutionary background. That's the easy thing, you know, to deal with. These are problems that we face whether we're in mainland China or in Taiwan and working among the Chinese people. Many social and community activities are connected with religious festivals. And so for a Chinese person to give up their religion, in many ways they have to give up their national holidays because they are so closely connected together. Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and other Eastern religions resist Christianity. These religions are supported by large numbers of Asians, and the leaders do not want to lose their support. There are a variety of beliefs found in these religions that are contrary to the teaching of the Bible, and certainly we don't have time to mention them all. But we mention, for example, animism, which is the belief that natural objects, natural phenomena, and the universe itself possesses a soul. The belief that natural objects have souls that may exist apart from their material bodies. For example, this speaker stand could have a soul according to animism. But that's not what the Bible teaches in Genesis chapter 1 verses 26 and 27 when the Bible says that God created man in his own image. It's not everything on this earth that is alive, but God has given man that eternal soul that one day will be judged and will go to heaven or hell. Another doctrine is reincarnation, the belief that people continue to die and are reborn until they get it right and then reach the point of nirvana. Ancestor worship, the belief that the living must continue to provide for the dear departed. In turn, the departed give good luck to those that are still alive. And so it is a superstitious situation in regard to the ancestor worship. And at a Chinese funeral, they'll have paper houses and cars and boats and all kinds of things that they'll burn as part of the funeral to send that to the other world for their ancestors. And twice a month, the first day of the Lunar New Year and the 15th day of the first day of the lunar calendar in each month and the 15th day of the month on the lunar calendar, they'll burn paper money. You know, Chinese are not stupid. They don't burn real money when they send it to their ancestors. They buy this real cheap paper money that they go to the store to buy, and it may cost 50 cents to buy the big stack of money like this, and they'll have a little cauldron out in front of their shop or their house, and they'll be taking that paper money and throwing it in there, and that's being sent on to their loved ones that have departed to continue to support them in the next world. These are things that have to be dealt with when we work among the Chinese people and other Asian peoples. Well, how do we meet this opposition? We mention a few things. Number one, no compromise is possible. Some in the past, and even today, have urged Asians to believe the Bible, to accept the Bible, while hanging on to their particular beliefs. In other words, go ahead and worship your ancestors, but now you need to believe that there's only one God and we ought to worship Him. That's something that's been taught in the past. The Apostle Paul didn't preach it that way. In Acts 17, 22 to 31 at Mars Hill, or in Acts 19, 18 to 20, which was mentioned earlier today. So we can't compromise the truth. We've got to teach the truth and allow people to decide if they're going to accept the truth and practice the truth, or if they're going to continue in their old practices. Another thing we need to do is to teach the Bible, not Americanism. I know that we are proud to be Americans, but Asians are also proud of their heritage as well. In the mission field, there is no need to change traditions and practices that do not conflict with Bible teaching. There's enough change necessary without trying to make people just like us in America. Thirdly, there must be unity of doctrine and practice. John 17, 20 through 22. Neither pray I for these alone, but that for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. Paul urged unity to the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 10. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. That is unity of doctrine and practice. Ephesians 4, 3 through 6, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. For there is one body and one Spirit, even as you are called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. We must teach unity of teaching, doctrine, and practice. And then number four, we need a larger workforce in order to overcome these problems. There's no question that more workers will make our efforts more successful in working among Asian people. We must become sensitive to opportunities presented to us in helping to reach this large segment of the world's population. We are currently searching for a family or two to make the commitment to move to Taipei, Taiwan, to help with a struggling congregation there. Now, what is involved in that? There's a lot of commitment involved in that, because there's fundraising that is involved in that. Brethren, if you can't raise your funds to go to the field, you won't be able to keep your funds when you get to the field. So one of the challenges of going overseas and doing mission work is first raising your funds. And when you do that, you're ready to go and begin doing that work in the field. And it's a tremendous commitment to determine to raise the funds that are necessary, especially living in a place like Taipei, Taiwan, not so expensive as it used to be. Used to be the third most expensive city in the world in which to live, behind Tokyo and Osaka, Japan. Now it's only in the top 10 or 15, I think, something like that. So not near as expensive, is it? Nearly as expensive as it used to be. But it is expensive. That's one challenge that's involved. Another challenge is learning the language. Because if you're going to be effective in a foreign country that speaks another language, you've got to learn that language. Now, that's not necessarily true in this country, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But we need brethren. We need to be seeking out families, dedicated families, who will make that commitment to go into other countries and work among different peoples in the world. Malaysia needs faithful brethren to go and work among them. Now, there's an advantage to going to Malaysia. You don't have to learn Chinese if you don't want to, because enough people there speak English, you're able to communicate in the English language. One of the difficulties there, though, is Malaysia is an Islamic country. And it's very difficult to get in there on a visa. But there are ways to work around that. If you're interested, talk to me about that. And we'll tell you some of the ways that can be, we can get around that problem. One of the ways that people are now working in mainland China is through humanitarian efforts, working with orphan homes and schools and making various efforts among the Chinese people in mainland China. Think about it for a minute. 1.3 billion people living in mainland China. More than 80% of those people live outside the cities. The wealth of China is in the cities. But more than 80% of the people live outside the cities. They live in the countryside. And there are more than 300 million Chinese people living in mainland China who are under the poverty level, which is, according to the statistics I've read recently, less than a dollar a day, $365 a year. 300 million people living on less than a dollar a day, that's more than the entire population of the United States. So you think about the needs that are there and the opportunities that can come as a result of humanitarian efforts that are made. A larger workforce will help us to overcome the opposition that we face. Another thing is time. Asians are very patient people. They do not think in terms of days, months, or years. They think in terms of generations. And it's going to take long-term commitments to have an impact on the Asian culture. One of the most difficult things for brethren to understand is that it takes many years to establish a self-supporting congregation among Asians. Now, it should maybe not necessarily be that way, but it has been in the past. That's something that we have to continue to work on. One of the things that I'm trying to do this year and next year is present materials on leadership so that we can develop the kind of leaders that we need among the Chinese people so that these congregations can become self-supporting, and not only self-supporting, but then to reach out to other peoples in the lands in which they live. We need more time. All of us have the same amount of time every day, every week, and every year, but it takes time and patience in working among the Chinese people. And then, of course, finally, it takes prayer. We've got to continue to pray for the Asian people. We've got to continue to pray that God will help us in the efforts that we're making to go and to help them understand His will. In the third place, we offer suggestions for reaching Asians in your community. One of the most successful things that has been used and can be used among Asians in your city, in your area, is using the Bible and Bible materials as a text for English classes. I read a book recently which said that there are 300 million, I guess this maybe is another different 300 million from the 300 million I mentioned a moment ago, but there are 300 million English students in China. So they're interested in the English language. And when people come to this country, they're interested in learning the English language. So one of the ways that we can help reach the Asians in our communities is by offering English classes. But not just English classes for the purpose of the individual to learn English, but to use Bible material and the Bible itself to help them learn English words. There's a lot of commonly used words in the Bible. And so while we're helping them with their conversational English, we're also letting God's Word sink deep into their hearts. Many Asians will take advantage of English classes that are offered in their community. And so by offering free English classes, we can attract people to study. This has worked overseas in contacting people who are interested in the truth. It has also worked well on this continent. Recently, I was asked to go to the Vancouver, Canada area to encourage the brethren there to get involved in reaching out into the Asian community. And so they put advertisements in the newspaper. They put posters up around in the various parts of the community. And they invited people to come to take advantage of a free English course. And we did it on a short-term basis since I was just there for a few days. But the brethren there were going to keep it going on a regular basis. And during this short-term class that we had in teaching the Bible in English, we had 11 people from the Surrey area of Greater Vancouver to come and take the classes. Some of them were from China. Some were from Taiwan. There was a family that came from Burma to study the courses. We had some from Africa as well. And so in our communities where we have large numbers of Hispanic, of Korean, of Chinese, of Indonesian, there are a lot of opportunities to teach people the gospel, and we can attract them by offering free English classes. Simon Huey, who has worked in Montreal in the past, is also living in the Vancouver area, and he is also using this kind of method to attract Asians to the church there in Richmond, in British Columbia, to help them to have an opportunity to hear the truth. And so the Surrey congregation, where I was last August, is continuing to make an effort in this same way. And so this is something that we can do in our local communities. We can designate some people who try as best as they can to speak English in an intelligible manner. That is, we speak clearly and slowly, and we articulate the words that we use. We don't use words like articulate when we talk to them, so that they can understand what we're saying. And when we do that, when we have people like that, and then give them Bible material to use, then we can offer that to people in our community and have an opportunity to teach them the gospel. Now, there are problems that can be encountered with this. Depending on the level of the student, it may be difficult to communicate effectively with them. They may not be able to ask the right question, or they may not be able to understand your answer. And so what we will want to try to do in the classes that we set up will be to divide students into different classes based on their ability to speak English. You don't want to put someone who can't understand even every other word of what you're saying with someone who understands every word, because the level of understanding is different, and one will feel like you're going too slow, the other will feel like you're going too fast, and nothing will be accomplished in that kind of class. So dividing the students up into different levels of ability will help us to teach them in a proper way. Some people will only be interested in English, and therefore may not be good soil. However, our responsibility is to teach and let God's Word do its work. I suggest that brethren get more involved in getting trained in teaching personally. Fishers of Men, for example, is a method that we have used in Duluth and other areas. And this material is available in English. It's available in Spanish. It's available in Russian. It's available in Indonesian. It's available in Chinese. It's also available now in Japanese. And so you can get this material for the different languages of the people that you're working with. You can use the English course. And then if you have the language that they speak, you can let them look at that particular course as well as the English. Or you can use our Truth for the World Bible Correspondence courses. They're written very simply. And you can simply take those courses and teach them something very simple and easy for them to understand. And by the way, if you're interested sometime in a Fishers of Men training class, I would urge you to get in touch with Tim Wilkes down in Hernando, Mississippi, who does this on a full-time basis, helping people to learn how to teach the gospel, teaching it as we have that responsibility. And it's interesting to me, many of you know Barry Hatcher, who's working in Indonesia. Barry is involved with the Southern Sumatra Bible Institute in Tanjung Karang in Sumatra. In order to graduate from the preacher training school there in Sumatra, You have to take the Fishers of Men course 3 times. 3 times before you can graduate from the school.